Good morning, brothers and sisters, friends, visitors. We're glad to have you here with us this morning. Thank you for coming to Ridgeview to share this morning with us, and I hope that this experience will inspire you to worship God. A few months ago, I saw a quote on a local church sign that piqued my interest. It said something like this. Not sure if I have the wording exact, but said something like this: "The chains of habit are too light to be felt until they are too heavy to be broken. The chains of habit are too light to be felt until they are too heavy to be broken." So over the past several months, since I noticed this saying, it's stuck in my mind. I've thought about it from time to time. Just how accurate is that? Is it really true that I can innocently and unsuspectingly develop a habit that eventually becomes so strong that it enslaves me, that it's so strong that I can't break it anymore? So I want to spend our time this morning considering habits. Habits and how they affect our daily lives, and especially how they can either help or how they can hinder our spiritual success, our relationship with God. The title I've given this consideration is simple. It's Promoting Healthy Habits. Promoting Healthy Habits. What is a habit? You don't need me to explain a habit to you. I think all of you know what habits are. But I want to be clear this morning that I'm talking about more than just having maybe the habit of brushing your teeth before you go to bed. That's a habit that you should have, but our habits are the things that we do without conscious thought, without conscious decision making. Other words that we could use here that maybe explain a little bit more what I'm talking about this morning are our tendencies. Our tendencies are our habits. They're the default. Our practices, things that we do regularly. This is the way we do it. That's our habits. Pattern is another word, or a routine. The way we go about our days, that's our habits. So a habit is a routine behavior that is repeated regularly and tends to occur unconsciously. It's all those things that we don't think about, those decisions, those behaviors that we don't think about doing. It is a fixed way or a default way of thinking, feeling, or acting. And that's what we're going to be talking about this morning. We want to talk about promoting or growing healthy habits. Now, you won't find the word habit in our King James Version Bibles at all. It's not in there. But the Bible references habits. It talks about habits by using words such as custom or a manner or the ways of a man. There's many verses that talk about that. One of the verses that I thought of when I was thinking about habits is Luke 4, verse 16. Which says, "And he," this is talking about Jesus, "came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up." So Jesus came back home to his hometown, and as his custom was, as his habit was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up for to read. That was a habit that Jesus had. Jesus was human just like us, and he had habits too. One of his habits was to come to the synagogue on Sunday and stand up to read. And I'm thankful for everyone who has the habit of coming to church this morning to worship God. That's a good habit to have. So why are habits so important? Important enough to spend a whole morning talking about them? Well, the truth is that my habits, the habits that I have, play a significant role in making me who I am. In his book, Creatures of Habit, author Steve Poe says, "We are basically the sum total of the decisions we make and the habits we've developed." Those are kind of the two things that make us the person that we are. They make up our personality. We are basically the sum total of the decisions we make and the habits we've developed. So think about your friends and acquaintances. Just pick somebody that's maybe a good friend or an acquaintance, somebody that just pops into your mind. When you think about their characteristics, how many of those characteristics are defined by their habits? You may think of one friend who has a habit of wearing a smile. And you think of that friend as someone who's always happy. That's a cheerful friend. That's one of their habits. And you define that person by this habit you've noticed. You may think of another one of your friends who has a habit of being late. And you think of that person as somebody who's a good friend, but he's marginally dependable. You never know exactly when he'll get there. You define him by your habits, right? You may think of someone else who has a habit of speaking their mind as someone who you can count on to give you honest feedback if you ask them a question. Or you may think of that same person who has that characteristic of speaking their mind, whatever's on it, as someone who you have to be really careful about what you tell. Because that information might go a lot of places where you didn't intend it to go. But that, of course, depends whether they're a friend who gives you honest feedback or a friend who tells a lot of stories. That depends on what that friend is in the habit of thinking about. And the point I'm trying to make here, the point is that our habits define us. They make us who we are. They define our personality. There's a fascinating study about our habits that was published this year by the University of Surrey from England. And the results of this study showed that 65% of our daily behaviors are initiated habitually. In other words, more than half of the actions you take on a daily basis are prompted by routine cues or habits rather than by deliberate choices. They're things that just happen because that's the way you do it, instead of things that you think about and you choose. This study also discovered that 46% of behaviors were both habit-driven and consistent with people's intentions. 46 out of those 65% of behaviors were habits that put people closer to their intended goals. They were consistent with people's intentions. If 65% of our behaviors are habitual, but only 46% of them align with our intentions, that leaves about 19% of our habitual behaviors that aren't aligned with our intentions. They're habits that are counterproductive or destructive, unhealthy habits. Of course, this study focused on a minuscule sample when compared to all humanity, but I think it illustrates to us, and the reason that I tell you about it, it illustrates to us the importance of our habits and the importance of the habits that we develop. So that got me to thinking, if you and I define each other by our habits, how much more do our habits define us in God's eyes? God knows about all our habits, even those private habits that we have. We might think we can hide from each other. We often say that actions speak louder than words, and that's especially true when we apply it to our habits, because those are actions that we take without even hardly thinking about it. Our habits reveal our true personality to ourselves, and they reveal our true personality to others. Now, the quote that I noticed on the church sign portrays habits as if they are something that you aren't even aware of until it's just too late to change it. That quote says that chains of habit are too light to be felt. You don't even realize that they're there until they're too heavy to be broken. There's a popular parable that claims if you throw a frog into a pot of boiling water, which I wouldn't recommend, but if you did that, the frog would jump out immediately. But if you put the frog in a pot of water that's room temperature, it's comfortable water, and you slowly heat it up over time, that frog would stay in the pot until it's cooked. This has been scientifically disproven, not by me, but the parable is an analogy for the process of habituation. And habituation is the means by which habits are formed. Habits don't form in one day, and often not even in a week. Habits are formed a little bit at a time over a period of time. Things change very gradually, and we gradually build habits. The fact is that although we probably should have noticed all along what was happening, often this saying that I saw on the church sign is more true than what we wish it would be. Often we don't notice our habits until we come face to face with the reality or the results of them. You know, if you have a habit of overspending, you may not fully realize that habit until you open your bank account and all the money's gone. So I believe it's important for us to regularly take inventory of our habits. If we're not paying attention to our habits, if we're not aware of our habits, then I believe that saying on the church sign is true, that the chains of habit will be too strong to break when we do actually feel them. If we're not aware of our habits, we will soon find that the chains of habit are very heavy indeed when we do feel them, and it's a habit that we want to get rid of. So, let's talk a little bit about taking inventory of habits. How can I take inventory of my habits? You can turn with me to Matthew chapter 7. I'd like to read some verses here in Matthew 7, verses 15 through 20. This is Jesus teaching about how people are identified. Well, let's just read the passage here. Matthew chapter 7, verses 15 through 20. Starting here at verse 15, Jesus is speaking. He says, "Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit. Bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them." So how can I take inventory of my habits? How do I realize my habits before they become something that is so strong that it can't be broken? Well, Jesus here is teaching that people are identified by their actions. So just the same way that you can identify a tree by its fruit or by its leaves, so we can also identify our habits by our actions. Verse 20 says, "Wherefore by their fruits ye shall know them." I believe that's true for every person. That's true for us as we think about habits. You know, it's easy for us to confuse good intentions with good habits. I think that's an accurate statement. When the results of our actions don't line up with our intentions, then I think it's time for us to evaluate the habits that we've formed. And what I mean by saying, when I say that it's easy for us to confuse good intentions with good habits, is this. There are very few people in this world who go about life with bad intentions, who want to hurt other people. There's very few times that that happens. But often what happens is that even though our intentions are good, the actual results of them don't line up with what we intended. And it's easier for us to say that, oh, well, my intentions were good, so it's not my fault that it didn't turn out right, or that it's not my fault that somebody got hurt. I'm not responsible because somebody got hurt. It's easy for us to rationalize our bad behavior by saying our intentions were good. But it's important for us to think about that. If it happens often that the results of our behavior bring bad results, the results of our behavior are not what we intended, then we need to take a hard look at our habits, our actions. Even though our intentions might be good, that may be a cue that we have a habit that we need to work on. Have you ever caught yourself wondering, now why did I just do that? Or why did I just say that? Why would I say something like that? Well, if you've ever caught yourself doing that, then you've probably identified one of your habits. Remember, our habits are those behaviors that happen without us thinking about it. They're behaviors that we don't consciously decide. And so, when you start wondering why you did something, that's a cue that you've identified one of your habits that maybe needs some help. Another way to take inventory of your habits is to talk to your friends, talk to your parents, talk to your peers. Other people can see our fruit. Sometimes they see our fruit a lot more clearly than we see it ourselves. And other people can help us identify habits that we have. So if we've taken inventory of our habits and we've maybe found habits that we wish we could break, maybe there's a habit that we are well aware of that we wish we could just get rid of, but it just seems that the chains are too strong to break. What can I do to break bad habits? Is there a way that I can break the chains of habit after I felt them? Or is that saying true, that once you feel the chains of a habit, once you understand that you're in bondage to a habit, that they're too strong to break? This is where I'd like to spend a lot of our time this morning. What can I do to break bad habits? I believe that that saying has a lot of truth, but thank God there are ways that we can be freed from the chains of habit. So what can I do to break bad habits? Well, the first point I have here is that we need to identify bad habits for what they are. James 5, verse 16 says, "Confess your faults one to another and pray for one another that ye may be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much." Oftentimes I've found in my life that the issues I wrestle with the most, the ones that I have the most problem with, are the ones where I try to convince myself that it's only a little problem. It's really not bad. It's those areas that everybody has that we call gray areas. Those are often the habits, the issues, the problems that we struggle with the most as Christians. They're the issues that we refuse to call a problem, yet we kind of know that it is a problem. Those are the ones that we wrestle with. So if there's a habit that you kind of realize you need to break, often the very first step in freeing yourself from that habit is to call it what it is. Identify bad habits for what they are. They're sin, or they're a problem. They're something we need to do something about. Identifying it for what it is the first step in becoming free from the chains of any destructive or unhealthy habit. When we decide that something is a problem, then we're more likely to do something about it. If we decide something is not a problem, is something that we want to live with or we decide to live with, then we never will break the chains of a bad habit. We never will rid ourselves of that problem. Elliot, I appreciated your devotions this morning. I had thought of Psalm 32, verses 1 through 5, that those verses you read this morning in relation to this point. And there, as Elliot brought out, the psalmist David talks about how freeing it is to confess your sin. Confession is the first step, or the step after realizing that something is a problem. The next step is to confess that. As James says, confess your faults one to another so that you can be healed, so that you can pray for each other and be healed. So identify bad habits for what they are. What's another way that I can break bad habits? What's the next step in breaking bad habits? For this one, I'd like you to turn with me to Luke chapter 11. A passage here that I would like to read. Luke chapter 11, verses 14 through 26. What can I do to break bad habits? Well, realize that you cannot free yourself in your own strength. I'd like to read this passage here. This again is Jesus speaking. We're going to start at verse 14. Jesus is talking to the Pharisees, and he's talking about things that are very difficult to understand. At least they are for me. This passage is a deep passage, and I don't know that I completely understand everything that Jesus is teaching here, but I would like to apply it today to the habits, the good or the bad habits that we may find ourselves involved in, especially the bad habits. Let's start reading here at Luke 11, verse 14. And he was casting out a devil, and it was dumb. And it came to pass, when the devil was gone out, the dumb spake, and the people wondered. But some of them said, he casteth out devils through Beelzebub, the chief of devils. And others, tempting him, sought of him a sign from heaven. But he, knowing their thoughts, said unto them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and a house divided against a house falleth. If Satan also be divided against himself, how shall his kingdom stand? Because ye say that I cast out devils through Beelzebub. And if I through Beelzebub cast out devils, by whom do your sons cast them out? Therefore shall they be your judges. But if I with the finger of God cast out devils, no doubt the kingdom of God has come upon you. When a strong man armed keepeth his palace, his goods are in peace. But when a stronger than he shall come upon him and overcome him, he taketh from him all his armor wherein he trusted, and divideth his spoils. He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth. When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places, seeking rest, and finding none, he saith, I will return unto my house whence I came out. And when he cometh, he findeth it swept and garnished. Then goeth he and taketh to him seven other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter in and dwell there, and the last state of that man is worse than the first. So what is Jesus teaching us in these verses? Well, I believe the main truth here is that Jesus is teaching that there is no neutral ground in life. No man's land cannot exist in the spiritual world. Our body, which is the temple of God, like Paul says in 1 Corinthians 3, our house cannot remain empty. It's either part of Satan's world, or it's part of Satan's domain, or it's part of God's domain. And these last three verses that I read, verses 24 through 26, I'd like to focus on them a little bit here. I think Jesus gave this example, or this example could be a parallel with a man. This man who cleans his house is a parallel of somebody who's trying to free themselves from a bad habit or a wrong habit of a sin by his own strength. The man who cleans his house after an unclean spirit leaves is an example of a person who tries to free himself of a habit by his own strength. He may succeed for a time, but his success will not last. And the reason for that is either we are in God's camp or we're in Satan's camp. There is no middle ground. Jesus said here, verse 23, he that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth. You can't be both God's and Satan's at the same time. So if you are dealing with habits that must be broken, sins, whatever it is in your life, how can I rid myself of them? Well, realize that you can't do it on your own. It is impossible. There, you may succeed for a time, but that success will not last. Paul talks about this more in Ephesians chapter 4. I'd like you to turn there with me. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 17 through 24. We're still thinking about how we can break bad habits, or how we can rid ourselves of bad habits. Ephesians chapter 4, we'll read verses 17 through 24 here. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of their mind, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over unto lasciviousness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. This is Paul talking about the past, somebody who did find themselves in bondage to sin and bad habits. And then he says, but ye have not so learned Christ, if so be that ye have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus, that ye put off concerning the former conversation the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that ye put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. And then he goes on to talk about things that we put away. Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth to his neighbor, and anger put away. Those are not part of the new man. So how can we rid ourselves of wrong habits? How do I break bad habits? Well, the only way to break bad habits for good is to allow God's power to replace old habits with a renewed mind. The only way to find lasting freedom is to turn our lives over to the power of God and to allow him to occupy our hearts. We can't have both the old man and the new man in our hearts. They can't both have control at the same time. So for the last part of our time here, I would like to talk about building healthy habits. Promoting healthy habits was the title of our consideration this morning. And I'd like to answer this question: how can I build healthy habits that bring me closer to God? The first verse I'd like to look here is 1 Corinthians. And you can turn to 1 Corinthians 9. Verses 24 through 27. We're thinking about how can I build healthy habits that bring me closer to God. Paul here is writing, know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. And from these verses, the point that I would like to make as relates to building healthy habits is that we must make decisions intentionally. Paul is talking here in these verses about his goal, the race that he's running to win the prize, which is the prize of a home in heaven. And he talks about physical races here on earth. Everyone who's training for a race is temperate in all things. They do things to prep themselves for the race. They build those muscles. They exercise. They're intentional because they have a goal. They're intentional because if they're not intentional, there's no way that they can succeed. There's a saying that I'm fond of quoting to myself and others, especially as relates to work, my work life, and that saying is, if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. You can't wander aimlessly through life and expect to find success. You have to be intentional about the decisions that you make, because those decisions form habits. We talked earlier about how our bodies, our lives are the temple of God. And that picture Jesus gave of the man who had a house that was swept clean, that was all clean after the unclean spirit moved out, and then the unclean spirit came back and found the house clean, and he moved right in with seven more unclean spirits. I picture the things that we allow into our lives kind of like a house, like the furniture in a house. So picture with me maybe a two-room house, and in one of the rooms is things related to God. That's God's room. That's where you the room where you go to worship. The other room of the house is the things of life. Physical things, your job, all the hobbies that you have and things like that. And place those things in the room like furniture, just in your picture, in your mind. Now, have you ever been in a house that was just so full and cluttered that you couldn't walk from one room to another? I have. My family and I, we bought a property that had an old shop on. That shop was full, packed to the ceiling with things. There were things in the back of rooms that probably nobody remembered were there. Maybe if they remembered them, there was no way they could have got to them. So I can picture what I'm talking about here, a room in a house that is so full and so cluttered that it's impossible to get from one room to another. Is that possible with our lives? If we're not intentional about our lives, if we're not intentional about the things that we bring into our lives, is it possible that our house, our life, can become so cluttered, so full of things, that it's impossible for us to get from the front door where we walk in to the room where God is? If you're not intentional with the things that you allow in your life, I believe that can happen to us. And that can be so many different things in our lives. And it's probably a different thing for every one of us. But we must be intentional about what we allow in our lives, or our lives will become so cluttered that clutter blocks our access to God. I talked about the shop that my family and I were cleaning out a while ago. And when we were cleaning out that old shop, we found a piece of furniture that my wife wanted in our house. It was a solid piece of furniture after we dug it out, cleaned it out. But the mice had been living in it for so long that it was dirty, smelled absolutely nasty. We didn't just bring it straight into the house just like it was, because it was dirty and it would have stunk the whole house up. You know, there's some things like that in life. A couple weeks ago, one of you here asked me what I thought about youth going to the bowling alley to do some bowling in evenings. And, well, I've never been to a bowling alley. It's just not something that ever appealed to me. So I'm not familiar with firsthand what a bowling alley is. It's one of those things that, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with throwing a ball at some pins. That sounds fun. I'm sure you can get into that. There's nothing intrinsically wrong with that. And so I wasn't sure how to answer that question, really. Would I recommend that somebody go to a bowling alley? Spend time there? Or is that something that we shouldn't do? So I thought about that for a while. We discussed it. And I came to the conclusion that this piece of furniture that I was talking about, that we hauled in from the shop, is kind of like this activity, or like the bowling alley. I'll try to explain how I mean that. There are some things in life that maybe are not intrinsically wrong. There's nothing wrong with them in and of themselves. But because they bring along another set of things that are bad influences, that can bring things into our life that we don't want, then it's best to avoid said activity. You know, that piece of furniture, I talked about how it was a good, solid piece of furniture, but it was dirty, it was nasty, it stank. We had to do some cleaning up and work on it before we brought it into the house. There's a lot of activities that are like that. And I don't know what the bowling alley in Jeff City is like, or Versailles, you name it. Never been there, probably will never go. It's not something that appeals to me. But what is the atmosphere of a place like that? Does it have, maybe it's loud music. Maybe it's a bar that's in the back of it that could cause temptation. Maybe it's just hanging out with people that are not people that have your best spiritual interest in mind. It's those things that come along with it that can clutter your life and can cause dirt and nastiness in your house, in your spiritual house is what I'm talking about here. Those are the things we need to be careful about. We need to be intentional about it. And I picked bowling because it's something I was asked about recently. There's so many other activities. In fact, you name almost any activity that you do, it can have the same detriments or the same things that come along with it. You could talk about hunting. Now, I enjoy hunting. I enjoy it a lot. It's something I like to do. There's nothing wrong with hunting. But if I get into hunting for the bragging rights, and I get into hunting because I want to shoot the biggest buck and boast to people that I really have something, that's dragging something dirty into my spiritual house that I'll have to deal with. It's me not being intentional about the things that I bring along. So think about that. How does that apply to your life? I would like this to be practical. I want you to apply that to your area. Be intentional with the decisions that you make. Be intentional with the things that you do. Don't do things that drag dirt into your house. May God bless you as you think about that. How do I build healthy habits that bring me closer to God? Well, make decisions intentionally. The second point I have here is conform to God's will for your life. I thought of the very familiar verses in Romans 12, verses 1 and 2, where Paul says, "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." So conform to God's will for your life instead of the world's will for your life, if you want to put it that way. If we go our own way instead of God's way, there's no doubt that we're going to find ourselves in chains again. And I found some verses in Proverbs where Solomon talks about that conforming. Proverbs 22, verses 24 and 25, Solomon writes to us, "Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go. Why not? Lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul." We conform to the things that we associate with. Our associations rub off on us. They help us form habits. We cannot expect to remain free if we conform to this world, but rather we must conform to God's will for our lives. Again, there are so many times when it's easy to convince ourselves that something is neutral. It's neither here nor there. But as a matter of fact, there is nothing that is completely neutral. It's either bringing you closer to God or it's bringing you further away from God. conform to God's will for your life. That's the way to become closer to Him. So, how can I build healthy habits that bring me closer to God? The last point that I have here is exercise the muscles of godliness. Paul, again, writing to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 7 through 8, says, "But refuse profane and old wives' fables, and exercise thyself rather unto godliness. For bodily exercise profiteth little, but godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is, and of that which is to come." Young man, I'm sure you like to exercise and build muscles. We all exercise in different ways, different things. Paul here says that there's no problem with bodily exercise, but it profiteth little. There's little gain from it. There's no lasting gain from it. But godliness is profitable unto all things. Exercising godliness is an investment that pays dividends in eternity. Exercising the muscles of godliness is building habits that bring us closer to God. Exercising godliness helps us to build godly habits that are beneficial here and now and are beneficial to us in eternity. So you can think about many different so-called muscles of godliness that you can exercise, but a few of the common ones that I think of right away are practice your Bible reading and prayer. That's just as important as exercising if you want to be fit. If you want to be spiritually fit, then you have to exercise the muscle of Bible reading. You have to exercise the muscle of prayer. You have to exercise the muscle of study. Study God's Word. And as you do that, that builds familiarity. It builds a habit. It builds something that's profitable now and in eternity. So I hope this consideration can inspire you. If you're struggling with bad habits, reach out. Ask your brothers, ask your sisters to pray for you. Talk to God about it. That's the only way that you can truly free yourself from things that are wrong, from things that you know are harmful. And as you go through this coming week, exercise those muscles of godliness. Build those habits. Practice godliness. And may God bless you. Let's kneel for prayer.